Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, folks, welcome to the latest edition, the latest chapter, the latest great adventure from Life on Planet Porky with myself, the Porkmeister, and, of course, rock chick writer extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. And Miss Jones, I have to say, as we're making this recording, it's a beautiful autumnal afternoon. I just love the way that the sun comes through the trees who've lost their leaves at this time of the year, and I feel really emboldened. You've said to me before that you tend to love the season in which you were born. Well, I was born in December, which is only a sort of a month away, so perhaps nature is talking to me.
I think it probably is, but you have a very cheerful demeanour anyway, don't you?
Mm.
And you like being outside. You've always liked walking across the downs.
Yeah.
You enjoy all the different times of day and the light and so on. So you're quite sort of in touch with nature, I think.
Well, I'll try to keep in touch with nature.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's a family show.
I'm not into sort of, sex in fields and all that kind of stuff. You might be hinting at.
Now, who said anything about sex? You've always got to drag it down.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Now, Miss Jones, delighted to say that you and I have a fixture a couple of days before Christmas, the carol service at St. Bride's Church. And on that day, it's a lunchtime carol service. We'll probably go out and have a pre-Christmas lunch, which will be absolutely marvellous. Can't wait for it. Haven't seen you for such a long time. But I think you've beaten me to the drop, haven't you? Because very recently, you did get yourself out into the confines of Fleet Street with some members of your family and had a rather nice Sunday lunch. Is that right?
Oh, we did, yes. It was Remembrance Sunday. Mm. As you know, so we had a wonderful service with a full orchestra and our usual magnificent choir at St. Bride's.
Wow, sounds fantastic.
Yeah, it really was. All my kids came to it, Mia, Henry and Bridie. Mm. And then we sloped off up Fleet Street, up the Strand to a club called 180 The Strand, which is part of the Soho House Group.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice club. The restaurant's on the 8th floor. You've got magnificent views.
Yeah.
And now that a few buildings have come down in Fleet Street, of course, there are wider views sort of over towards St. Bride's, all the way to St. Paul's and so on.
Lovely.
So it feels much more spacious, that bit of sky. Mm. And we had a wonderful Sunday roast, the four of us, and it was just like the old days.
Mm. Oh, super.
And it wasn't that expensive. I'm hearing reports that London dinner tables are exorbitant nowadays.
Well, thank you for bringing that up, because I've got a report here, and it's from one of these sort of PR companies. What's it called? I can't find it now. But it says that dining out in London now will cost you £200 a head. So how many people were with you? How many members of your family were with you on this occasion?
So I have three children. Yep. So there were four of us.
So that's £800.
My My bill was 270.
270, which is a lot, by the way, to pay for it.
It's a lot of money, actually. I sort of always steam up a bit when the bill comes and think, oh God, you know. Yeah. But because we come from the old days, and anything more than 200 quid for four people is quite a lot of money, isn't it?
Oh, Leslie Ann, let me go back further. I mean, I remember, you know, a bit of a lunch in Soho, a dinner in Soho after a night in Fleet Street would never cost you more than 50 quid just for the two of you. You know what I mean?
It's gone berserk. It begs the question.
Yeah.
Who can afford this kind of thing?
Well, I totally agree. Now, I read this report, and I'm still trying to find which blinking PR company put it out, but that's irrelevant. The point is, it's been put out. All the papers picked it up. £200 a head. Now, I have to say, I'm not sure if I've told you this or our millions of listeners, I did go to Langan's Brasserie quite recently with a female colleague, and we did have a lunch, and it cost £400. I think I've told that story already.
Are you serious? 400 quid for a lunch for two?
I'm not joking. We went to this lovely bar on Piccadilly called Henry's, okay? We went in there.
I know Henry's,
absolutely. Had a couple of beers. And then you come out, turn left, walk around the corner into, is it Stratton Street, I think?
That is Stratton Street.
Stratton Street.
Which leads down to the old Mayfair Hotel.
That's right, absolutely. And Langan's hadn't been reopened that long. We got in and we had a couple of sherbets in the back bar at Langan's and then sat down. The problem was the price of the wine because, as I say, my female colleague wanted Chablis. And the guy brought a bottle of Chablis and it was priced at £180, okay?
Unbelievable. Why didn't you send it back and have the house white?
Right. She did and said, I'll have the house white. Guess what? The house white was £120.
Well, that's ridiculous. I would have got up and walked out.
Well, you couldn't because I wasn't being picky about the prices, you know.
What a question. Was she worth it?
It wasn't a romantic liaison. It was an old.
Are you sure?
I'm absolutely sure. It was an old friend from years ago. But I had a bottle of red, right? And I thought.
Did she split the bill with you, by the way?
No, because I've never, ever allowed a woman in all my life to go Dutch, I think they call it, don't they, to split a bill. If I'm out for lunch with a lady, I always pay the bill. In fact, actually, if I'm out for lunch with a bloke, I normally pay the bill because I feel more comfortable about it. I don't like to be beholden, if you see what I mean. Now, that's a very strange thing to say, but I go out with people who are much wealthier than me, but I always insist on paying the bill because I don't want to be thought of as, oh, you just came for a free lunch or something like that. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I'm a bit like that myself. Yeah. You know, I also feel uncomfortable. And over the years, I've always been the one going, no, let me do it. Exactly. It's my turn. It's all of that, isn't it, all the time? Mm. Because you don't want them going away thinking, bloody freeloaders.
No, I totally agree. In fact, your mate's wife, Danny Baker's wife, you're a big friend of Danny Baker's wife, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Danny went bankrupt a few years ago.
He did.
Yeah. And I read a piece about his problems with that. And he actually said, one of my problems was that for the last 20 years, I've always been the first to the bar and I've always been the first to pay the bill. And Danny actually said, it bankrupted him. He wouldn't let anybody else pay. So he paid all the time. You know what I mean?
I don't really understand. I mean, I adore Wendy. She's the sweetest woman on earth. Yeah. But they live in a huge house.
That's right.
They go on very expensive holidays. Mm. And the less money they have, the more they seem to spend.
Yeah, well.
So I'm you know, it's none of my business and I wouldn't presume to pry into their affairs or anything. But I don't know. There are ways of getting out of debt and poverty.
Yeah. Well,
not one of them.
Sell your house. Mate of mine was a trader in the city for many years. And then it just went wrong, you know what I mean? And I don't know, he fell foul of rules or something like that. And all he's got left is his £2.5 million house in Islington. Literally, that's all he's got left. So he's going to have to sell it.
But that's quite a lot of all you've got left, isn't it?
Yeah,
but a £2.5 million quid house.
But he's still only 45. So if we all live another 40 years, you know, he's going to... Anyway, look, getting back to the fine dining thing. So this bill came to 400 quid in Langan's. I was quite shocked by it, I have to say. But if you're... And you said this to me when we exchanged emails earlier about this. You said, no, you can go to other places. My favourite lunching place is Wetherspoons on a Friday afternoon, eating fish and chips with a mate of mine who I often meet after we finish shows on Friday morning. And the total bill, with a couple of pints to start off with and then two bottles of wine, will not exceed £50.
Well, that's much more reasonable, isn't it? I mean, I'm not into all these posh restaurants anymore.
I hate posh restaurants, actually. Hate them. I hate the pomposity. I hate the, you know, the sheer lack of atmosphere and, you know, play it by the rules and all that. No,
Well, some of them are okay. I've got a lovely friend, an elderly gentleman who I know from church, who always likes to go to Scott's. That's his favourite restaurant. They know him in there. He derives comfort from when he walks in the door. They all know his name. He gets the best table, all of that. And he does love to go there. And I don't find it pompous. I like the Groucho Club because it's my front room. That's not cheap either. That's coming in at the moment at about 80 quid a head with a bottle of house white. I also like Joe Allen, which is about 60
quid
a head, if you're sensible about the wine.
That's the thing, isn't it, being sensible about the wine. That's where they get the markup. Anyway, there we go, Miss Jones. Now let me tell you this, we're only now, as this podcast has come out, 4 or 5 days away from the start of the World Cup. I detect a distinct lack of interest or people wanting to get involved. For instance, I've done 4 World Cups myself and 3 European Championships. Your father probably did 15 in all. And in the weeks leading up to it, before you went off to, you know, Europe or South America or Asia, you loved the fact that White Van Man was driving round with the flag of St. George, you know, put on the top of his van, flying in the wind, ba, 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 come on, England, all that kind of stuff. I see nothing like that at the moment. Do you think, Miss Jones, it's a reflection of where the World Cup is being played at the moment and what people think about it?
Absolutely, it is. We are much more aware these days of all aspects of life and international goings on and that kind of thing, largely due to social media, I think. Well, Qatar's human rights record leaves a lot to be desired, doesn't it? The treatment of migrant workers there, the deaths of many migrant workers, their stance against homosexuality. We find it all completely abhorrent. We are angry with David Beckham.
We are.
For taking the millions. Rod Stewart, by the way, your mate, was offered £1 million to perform in Doha during the World Cup, and he turned it down.
That was 3 years ago. They were trying to pump it all up then and, you know, work up, and Rod turned it down, absolutely.
I think we're ashamed of this World Cup, actually. I think we're ashamed of FIFA. I think we're ashamed of our team. I think most of us feel we shouldn't be going anywhere near Qatar. Yeah. And I certainly will not be watching this World Cup.
Wasn't that amazing what Rod did, by the way? Because when you think about it, he's never actually been, you know, a campaigner for human rights and all that. But he knew what decency was and decided, I'm not going to get involved in this. I thought that was quite astonishing. Talking about Rod, if you don't mind me talking about him, I saw a picture of him and his 15-year-old lad, right, in the paper, and the 15-year-old lad is called Alistair. And guess what? About, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago now, Rod took us to the Scottish FA Cup semi-final in Scotland, Celtic versus Rangers at Hampden Park, on his private plane. From Stansted. And Alistair, who was then probably, I don't know, 11 or 12, and his younger brother, because Rod's got 2 children by Penny Lancaster, 2 boys, were on the plane. And the little one was, you know, a bit shy and all that kind of stuff. But Alistair was all over the place, running around the plane and bouncing around and all that kind of stuff. He's now what your son is. He's about 5 inches taller than his father, and he's only 15.
My son's about 2 feet taller than me.
Exactly. But he's not 15. You know what I mean? By the time Alistair's 15, 21 or 22, probably are. But just a lovely picture of him and his son. And I remember when we were in Glasgow together, and Rod kept saying to him, if you don't behave yourself, you're not coming again. You know, teasing him and all this kind of stuff. And this great story which I may have told before. I'm not sure that I have, because Rod told me never to tell it. After the game, of course, we had a private car to take us back to the airport to get the plane to come home to Stansted. But we had to go across Glasgow to a Nike store, believe it or not, and ride across, you know, ride across from east to west Glasgow. And of course, it was packed because the big game and all that kind of stuff. And we got there, and we went there because it was either Alistair or his little brother wanted a particular pair of Nike shoes, you know, trainers and all that kind of stuff. And this poor lad who was doing his Sunday shift at this Nike store was standing in the middle of an aisle of shoes, obviously. And the bloke walked up to him and said, "Hello, mate, I haven't got much time here. I need a Nike XX22 size 8. Can you get them for me?" And the poor kid, who was aged about 16 or something, looked at Rod Stewart and thought, "This can't be Rod Stewart." Do you see what I mean? I mean, the total shock of this boy.
If he was 16, did he actually recognise who Rod Stewart was?
Well, I don't know the answer to that one, actually. That's a good question. But Rod is quite famous in Scotland for his support of the Scottish team, you know, and Celtic, and has had lots of pictures in the papers up there and all that. Anyway, this poor lad staggers off, you know, to try and get these shoes and all that. And then Rod turns to me and said, "Don't you ever mention the price of these shoes." He said that to me.
And go on, how much were they?
£220.
Oh, right. Gosh. Well, how long ago?
About 3 years ago.
Oh, God. Okay.
But...
well, it's not as if he can't afford it.
No. The point is, and this is why it's such a lovely story, is that Penny Lancaster, Rod's wife, had said under no circumstances must you pay over £150 for these shoes that you're going to get for Alistair, because we're not going to indulge them.
You know what? I mean, how silly, because she gets to see the shoes when they arrive back at the house. She can go straight online, look up that particular model and see exactly how much it costs. Mm.
Well, yes, but in different stores, they can cost different prices, I suppose.
True.
Or something like that. But anyway, look, it was just lovely to, you know, to be part of that and all that kind of stuff. Miss Jones, what do you think about the fact that by 2060, only one in 400 couples who cohabit will be married? I can't believe that.
I'm not surprised. The current divorce rate in the UK is 42%.
Wow.
So it's getting on for half. The most common divorce age, by the way, is between 40 and 44.
Right.
And here's another good stat. 62% of divorce petitions are lodged by women. I think it's not really a shame.
What percentage is that?
62% of divorce petitions are brought by women.
So 12 out of 20 women are calling for divorce over men. Yeah, I see. Yeah.
It tells you a lot, doesn't it? I think commitment is less popular these days. People can't afford weddings on the practical level. Yeah. Life has moved on from the idea of us committing to one partner for life.
But you can go to a, surely you can go to a register office, can't you, and do it in 15 minutes.
You can have
a little celebration at the pub around the corner. What's wrong with that?
You can, but people don't want to do that. I mean, there is quite a lot of stories lately about potential guests being asked to contribute 100 quid ahead towards the wedding reception, that kind of thing.
Yes.
But I think it's not as frivolous as the wedding day itself. I think it says much more about the notion of commitment over the longer term. Yeah. Most men bugger off anyway. If you think about single parents, the statistics on single parent families, most of these are women.
Yeah,
single women bringing up children. You've got very few single men bringing up children.
Very, very few. Very few. In fact.
So I think it says a lot about women asserting themselves more and suggesting that they don't want to be beholden to a man who isn't going to be there for them.
No, you could well be right. One of the reasons I never got married was seriously because I thought I'm never going to be able to, you know, endure it. Endure, I don't know if that's the right word, but I never.
Well, as in stay faithful to her alone.
Exactly. Well, not just that. It's just that, did I want to settle down in one house, have two children or three children? And my worst fear was after work every night, would I then have to go home rather than enjoying 2 or 3 hours in the pub which was the best part of my day and where I got most of my ideas and, you know, mingled and interacted with my colleagues and all that. I know it's very, very selfish, but at least...
No, but I understand. I do understand because I grew up in a household like that where my father, God rest his soul, did spend at least 2 hours in the pub with his colleagues every evening after work and then came home to an absolute battering from my mum. Who would scream at him for hours and we had to get up and go to school the next day. You have always been a maverick and there's nothing wrong with that. I think it sort of flags up the notion that nobody can have both. You've got to make choices and I admire you for having made that choice.
I totally agree. And my defence always is that almost everybody I work with in Fleet Street, including yourself, Miss Jones, has been subject to a failed marriage. And a failed marriage means paying for children. You see what I mean? Now, I'm not trying to be a martyr here, but I'm saying I knew I could never be a proper father. I would have loved to have children.
I wish my children had had a proper father, but, you know, that's a whole other set of novels.
Exactly. But what I'm saying is that I still think that marriage is a great institution. So, as you quite rightly described me, I'm a bit of a maverick and I was energetic and I wanted to do all sorts of things in life. But I do know people, even in our profession, who decided just to stick to the same job for 30 years, rise through the ranks and then retire with a pension. And they should get married because that's really solid and their children are brought up properly. We lived in an amazing world in Fleet Street. Do you remember Don Mackay? Right.
Oh, God, yes.
Don, one of my best mates in Fleet Street, and for the benefit of our millions of listeners, a rough, tough Scotsman who, you know, never, you know, took a quarter or anything like that, actually ended up marrying a Coronation Street actress.
Nicola McAuliffe, brilliant actress who was a Shakespearean actress. Before she ended up on Coronation Street.
She was.
They used to say of her that she was the prettiest ugly woman on television.
That makes great sense to me because we used to get together, you know, Don and Nicola and myself and whoever my girlfriend was at the time, usually a secretary from the Daily Express, actually.
Oh, God, yeah, he had them all. He had them all.
Yeah. And we'd go to some, you know, Chinese...
Or as they used to say, even the ones who let him...
This is a family show.
Family show.
But she was a lovely lady, but she was so sophisticated and Don was so bloody, not rough, but so energetically Scottish, if you know what I mean, you know, and a great guy. I'll tell you a funny story. You won't believe this. All the reporters once were doorstepping Highgrove, you know, which was Charles's home when he was the Prince of Wales, right?
Well, he's still got that place.
He has still got that place.
That was a good gig, though, getting down there to doorstep Highgrove.
Yeah, it was. Did you ever do it yourself?
Yeah, I did, yeah. And it was a good gig because it's way out of town. Yeah. You could get up to all kinds of mischief in the name of work.
Yes.
Just saying.
Absolutely. Anyway, so I wasn't there. I was the news editor at the time, okay? Back in Fleet Street, but you know, you keep in touch, you're right, what's happening? And reporter said, Mike, you won't believe this. And I said, what do you mean? He said, you know, we're trying to get a word out of Charles or some of his people. He said, a bloke walked down the drive and brought us some cups of coffee. And I said, well, that's very nice. Yeah, that's very nice. He said, yeah, but it was actually one of our colleagues. I said, what are you talking about? He said, what's the name of the guy I'm talking about?
Don Mackay.
Thank you.
Did you lose the plot there?
I'm sorry. I had a brain fog there. He said, it's Don Mackay. I said, don't be ridiculous. What are you talking about? He said, no, honestly. Don came down with a tray with 8 cups of coffee and gave us all cups of coffee at the gates to Highgrove. I said, have you gone mad? And it turned out that Nicola McAuliffe, is it McAuliffe?
Nicola McAuliffe.
Nicola McAuliffe. Was a friend of the woman who's now the Queen. What's she called?
Camilla Parker Bowles.
Yeah,
as she was at the time.
Yeah, yeah. So, what is she now? Queen Regent.
She's the Queen Consort.
Queen Consort. Thank you.
Keep up, yeah, Mike. Keep up.
Thank you. I'm slowing down here, folks, but don't worry. I'll regain my energy. No, seriously, Nicola and Camilla had been friends for years. And Don and Nicola were staying at Highgrove when this whatever story it was broke, and Tom brought the coffee to the gates. Isn't that amazing?
That's hilarious. You can imagine him having a real chuckle over doing that as well.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Hi, everybody. I'm going to brighten up your day by telling you about Harry's. The fantastic shaving experience. They're not just the super sharp razor company. They are much, much more. And you can start with a trial set that is absolutely free. You just have to pay for delivery. In your trial pack, you get the unique, engineered and weighted Harry's handle, a 5-blade cartridge, complete with precision trimmer, foaming shave gel and a travel blade cover if you're on the move. Plus, a free hydrating night spray of lotion. Absolutely everything you need for that very smooth shave. Your trial set is packaged in beautiful aquamarine containers that let you know you're in for something special. The weighted handle makes you feel you're holding something more than just a razor. And you are. The trimmer blade makes it so easy to get to those hard-to-reach places. The foaming shave gel makes the blade skim across your face like a skater on an ice rink. And after a couple of splashes of night lotion, you'll feel your skin positively invigorated and looking healthier. Now, Harry's products are put together with 0% sulfates or dyes and are alcohol-free. Absolutely nothing to cause concern. Everything is crafted by the experts who've devised invigorating formulas, and you will feel the difference no matter what your skincare goals are. Believe me, you're a winner every time. So, folks, make sure to support our podcast, Life on Planet Porky, and start your own skincare journey by redeeming a free Harry's trial set. All you cover is £3.95 for your delivery. So here are the details. Just head to harrys.com/porky and have your trial set and free night lotion delivered to your door. I'll give you that one more time. That's harrys.com/porky.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. May I also apologise for my brain fogness in the last few minutes?
You've got the giggles now, haven't you?
I've got the giggles.
Have you been on the sauce?
No, I haven't been on the sauce, but I've got too many ideas in my head. There's too many great stories, Miss Jones, that I want to talk to you about because you always have such a great view on all of them. I want to tell you about, I happened upon a Carly Simon YouTube video the other day when I was surfing the channels, you know what I mean?
Oh, I love Carly Simon.
And some of these channels down to like 185, 186 on the Sky platform, which I use, they have like, you know, songs of the 60s, songs of the 70s, all that kind of stuff. And I literally just flicked past it and it was Carly Simon singing, You're So Vain.
You have been on the sauce because you've got hiccups.
No, I promise I haven't. I was looking over my notes there.
Why do I waste my time?
Yeah. And anyway, so I thought that Carly Simon was actually just a singer, and people wrote songs for her, and she stood in front of a microphone, she sung them.
Damnation in a half.
And the wealthy daughter of the Mr. Simon who founded Simon Schuster, the huge publishing company. Okay. But then I saw her sitting there at a piano. She was playing the piano, she was singing, and she was literally directing the band, if you see what I mean. I didn't know she was that talented.
Well, she wrote all her songs on piano. It's very difficult to write songs if you don't play any instrument. Most of these artists play a number of instruments, actually. Yeah. And that's how they write their songs. Incredibly, Carly Simon will be 80 next birthday.
Unbelievable. I can't believe that. And by the way, so beautiful. So this was probably made in the 70s. So.
Yeah, she had a gobful of teeth as well, didn't she? She had the most perfect American sort of teeth. Yeah. And she was married to a great hero of mine, James Taylor, for 10 years. Mm. But their marriage disintegrated because he was such a drug addict.
Interestingly, James Taylor.
He was just a long-haired hippie
who picked up an acoustic guitar and some things like "When You're Sad and Lonely," and it was just crap music to me.
Oh well, no, I disagree. And he's still a major, major artist. I went to see him in Hyde Park. Must have been summer 2019 because that was the last time we had live gig before the lockdowns, wasn't it?
Okay.
Oh, it was him, Bonnie Raitt, who's another artist I really rate, pardon the pun, and also Paul Simon on his final tour before he retired.
Right.
A good factoid about "You're So Vain" is that that's Mick Jagger on the backing vocals of that track.
That's amazing.
But the song is not about him, as everybody thought for years, because Carly and Mick had an affair.
Oh, did they?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
if you can call it an affair with Mick Jagger, mostly it was just a shag, wasn't it, to be honest.
Yes.
But, that is him on backing vocals on that song.
Amazing. And, of course, the song was written about, what's his name, the Hollywood actor.
Warren Beatty.
Warren Beatty, yeah.
Although she has withdrawn that since and said, maybe I was just toying with the idea that it was him. I don't think we'll ever really know. And my personal view is that the song was probably a composite song and that the subject of that composite song was various ex-lovers of hers. She did say she had an awful lot of affairs and she fell in love with every single one of them.
Yeah, that's amazing. It could be a composite, yeah. The story I really love about Warren Beatty is that when he was in his 20s, and I think he'd already romanced Joan Collins and all that kind of stuff, was that, Warren Beatty wanted to so build up his reputation as the best and biggest and most notorious shagger in Hollywood, that whenever anybody rang him, before he picked the phone up — there were no mobile phones in those days, obviously — he'd start breathing in and out very heavily, and then pick up the phone and say, yeah, what do you want? I'm busy. And he hoped that he'd get the reputation for every time you ring Warren, he's actually having sex with a woman, no matter whether it's day or night. You know what I mean?
That's utterly pathetic.
Well, it is, but apparently that's what he used to do. But
They might have thought he was doing something else.
Well, we won't go there, Miss Jones. Miss Jones,
a bit of soft service.
honestly, this is we're hitting low levels.
Family show.
Listen, I've seen a piece from a guy, getting back to rock music now, who I've never heard of, but his name is. Hang on.
He's so unknown that you can't even remember his name.
No, it's true. His debut album, Without Fear, topped both the UK and the Ireland album.
Oh, Dermot Kennedy.
Dermot Kennedy, that's right, yeah. And the reason my eye was drawn to it was I've never heard of him and all that, but he said this: "I never talk about what songs mean. I don't want to cloud how fans interpret them within their own lives." And I think, that really struck a chord with me. Like, for instance, I listened to all the Beatles records all my life, and it was very distressing to me when I found out that Martha, My Dear on the White Album was about Paul McCartney's dog and not a lady friend called Martha. You know what I mean? Shouldn't we all be allowed to have images and visions in our head about a song we hear?
Well, of course, and we all are allowed. But this is not a new idea. Freddie Mercury told me way back in the 1980s that he would never explain Bohemian Rhapsody, for example, or any other of his songs. Mm. And his line on that was, and this is a literal quote, if you see it, darling, then it's there.
Yeah, no.
So, and poets have said this. T.S. Eliot said this in the way back. You know, it's not a new idea.
Yeah.
I think it is a good thing to leave songs open to interpretation.
Yes.
And then we can all put our own ideas into it as well. And it enhances and adds to the listening experience.
Yeah. No, I should have known about Martha, My Dear, because one of the lines is, hold your head up, you silly girl. Look what you've done. And I thought, that sounds a bit...
Oh, that's nice singing.
Yeah, thank you. And that, you know, I thought then, that sounds a bit misogynistic if he's talking about a woman. So I was quite pleased to find out it was about his dog called Martha, who he took to Scotland with him when he rode.
I'm going up there. I didn't tell you. You heard it here first. Right. I'm going up to the Kintyre Peninsula.
No.
At the end of the month, because I just started research on a new book.
My God, are you going to Paul's Muller Kintyre estate?
Going to High Park Farm and, yes, to the beach on the Mull of Kintyre where the video for that single was shot.
Is Hyde Park Farm McCartney's estate?
Yes.
Wow. Oh, and can you tell
me? Yeah, I've also found this incredible guy. Oh, this is an amazing story. Mm. I found this guy. I won't say his name because, it, you know, you can't give too much away. Yeah. This guy, when he was 16 years old, performed playing on the bagpipes on the Mull of Kintyre video, and I'm going to be interviewing him.
Wow. I honestly, I can see that video now. McCartney starts off sitting on a stile, right, and playing an acoustic guitar, and Linda's walking in the background towards him. And then Denny Lane comes in and starts playing an electric guitar. Obviously, they're not plugged up because it's a video.
It looks a bit silly, that, doesn't it? Wandering around with an electric guitar exactly. With a lead flapping.
Exactly. That's right, yeah. And then they walk towards the edge of the kind of field. They look over the beach, and then from a long way off, you see the... And the pipes band comes in. And what the most amazing bit of that video for me is the pipe band leader who is swirling his stick in front of him, in the air, behind his back. Amazing. I watch it just to see his sheer genius in twirling that around.
Do you know, I never can watch the video to Mull of Kintyre without becoming tearful, without a lump in my throat. No. And I suppose it takes me right back to when I first heard it. What was it, 1978, I think, that song
it was came number out. One at Christmas in, yes, you're right, 1978.
And I think it was for the longest time, it held the record as being the biggest selling British single in history. Mm. But of course it was overtaken recently, or more recently, I should say, by when Elton John, when he re-recorded Candle in the Wind for Princess
yes,
Diana
that's right.
after she died. And that became the biggest selling single. But it held the record for a really long time.
Yeah.
It evokes such emotion in me. I don't know why, because I'm not Scottish, although I am Celtic. I'm Welsh. Mm. By roots. And I suppose there is a connection between all Celts, Welsh, Irish, Scottish, that there's something very deep about that. I don't even know what the word is. What would you say that it was?
Well, to me, it was just magic. I love the song. I think it's McCartney's best song outside of the Beatles. Many people would disagree. You know,
a lot of people said how naff it was.
Yeah, I know, but I can't understand that. I just love the song. And it still entrances me. You know what I mean?
And a lot of other people, thought that it was the best song they ever heard, or they wouldn't have bought it.
No, I totally agree.
It has a definite effect on me, and I'm really quite excited about going up there to that beach.
Mm. And do we know any more about this book that you're writing, Miss Jones?
All will be revealed.
All will be revealed, okay. Miss Jones, listen, let's get to a little bit of a serious situation. I mean, it's all fun on Life on Planet Porky, but I read a report this week which really resonated with me. And it was that because of the National Health Service doesn't work properly, Do you know that people in the National Health Service, it is alleged in this story I read, they pack up and go home at 2:30 or 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon like anybody in the commercial sector does. And I know this to be true because when my mum, God rest her soul, was struggling in her last days, I used to have to go and see her. No, I didn't have to go and see her. I wanted to go and see her, you know what I mean? And she was in hospital in Bournemouth. And on one occasion, I got a call from my sister on a Friday night and it was quite late. Mum's had a turn again. She's been taken back into hospital. Can you come down? I couldn't go down, obviously, that Friday night. You know, been out with people, had been drinking. Went first thing Saturday morning, went to the Bournemouth Hospital. And it's a very big hospital, very big wide corridors to all the wards. And what struck me was at 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning, there didn't seem to be many people around. And when I got to Mum's ward, there was actually nobody there except my mum. And I thought, I just don't understand this. The NHS is under pressure. These hospitals are supposed to be bursting at the seams. But I was told, no, Saturdays and Sundays is free time.
I don't get this, really. I haven't seen it myself, not at my mother's local hospital, yeah, where appointments even continue on Saturdays and Sundays.
Right.
And I think they installed that new way of doing things because they couldn't get through the vast numbers of people who needed appointments and who were still outstanding on the list,
yeah,
to be seen. Mm. So I've not seen that. I see that 7 day a week operation still happening.
The report I saw, it rang a bit of a, you know, sort of bit of a resonance with me. And I thought, listen, we've just talked about Paul McCartney. So I've got to bring you back to a lovely picture we saw in the newspapers this week. Sir Paul McCartney, literally bumped into Julian Lennon in an airport lounge, and neither of them knew that each were going to be there when they were flying out of London. Isn't that incredible? And they, the picture of them together, which one of them took on their phones, was just lovely. Julian's now over 60, and Paul, of course, is 80, isn't he? But then they transposed the picture to when Paul went down to Surrey to try and comfort Julian because of the breakup of his mother's marriage to John Lennon, Cynthia Lennon, with Yoko Ono. And I just thought, what a lovely, kind man to have thought, you know, in the midst of the Beatles' revolution, when they were the most famous people in the world, he took time out to drive down to Surrey to try and comfort Julian because John Lennon, who was like emotionally unable, couldn't do it.
Yeah, and given how incredibly young they were at the time as well, they were only in their 20s, weren't they, the Beatles at that time. But Paul always had an affinity with children, and he'd known family heartache himself because his mother died when he was, I think, 11 years old.
So 14, I think, to be honest.
His brother Mike was 11, I think he's just always had an affinity for children. He adores his grandchildren. Yeah. I did wonder a little bit about that picture because Paul McCartney never flies commercial. He only ever flies private.
That worried me a bit, I have to say.
So I thought, how much of a coincidence was that,
Could they have been in the private part of the airport? Do you see what I mean? Because Julian can.
Yeah, I don't know, because Paul doesn't need to go to airports, does he, really?
Well, look, I'm bigging myself up now, but we talked about Rod Stewart earlier in this podcast. When we flew with Rod from Stansted, we went to the private jet port, you see what I mean, where the private jets come in. But you still have to go through all the security checks and take your belt off and shoes and all that kind of stuff. You see what I mean? So
I do, but Paul McCartney does not go through your standard airport security. He doesn't.
He does if he gets on an aeroplane in this country. I know that sounds ridiculous, but he does.
Yeah, but not with everybody else, is what I'm saying. He just goes through party. Yeah. So it made me think, was that picture staged as a sort of publicity campaign for Julian's new album, which admittedly is very good. It's called Jude.
Yeah.
We talked about it before.
Yeah. But if that's the case, then Paul McCartney's an even nicer man, isn't he, for agreeing to do
it? Yes, of course.
You know,
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, if we're casting aspersions, I apologize. But I'm always suspicious when I see a picture like that.
Yeah.
Let's say.
Yeah.
Before we leave, I'd love to pay tribute to a dear friend of mine who's just died.
I was going to ask you about this. And if you don't mind, if I can just tee it up to say that I'm suffering from chronic toothache at the moment. I mentioned this to you and then you came back with this amazing story you're going to tell us now.
I'm so sorry that you're suffering from toothache. Yeah. My friend Rab Noakes, who was a founding member of Steeler's Wheel back in the day.
Was he really?
He was, and he wrote songs with Jerry Rafferty. He wrote songs for...
Stuck in the middle with you, fools to the left of me, jokers to the right, here I go. Is that one?
Clowns to the left of me. But anyway, yeah, that is the song. And he wrote a wonderful song called Together Forever, which was on the Lindisfarne album, Fog on the Tyne, which is one of the first albums I ever
wrote. Fog on the Tyne is all mine, Fog on the Tyne is all mine.
Yeah. That one. Anyway, Rab had some dental extractions. He developed a problem with his jaw. He said to me in an email, there's something up with my bite.
I'm sorry, I want to put this into perspective for our millions of listeners.
Yes.
What timeline are we on here? How recently has this happened?
Last week.
Like what day last week?
I can't remember which day. I mean, he went to see a specialist.
Right, so you get a message. You get a message from this friend of yours who used to be a member of Steeler's Wheel. And what does the message say to you?
He said, I'm going to hospital today. I'm going to see a specialist because I've got something up with my bite. You know, when you put your jaw together and close your mouth and your sets of teeth and stuff, and there was something up. And I was talking to my mum about it after that call, and she said, it sounds like he could have a fractured jaw, which sometimes happens when you have dental extractions and so on, because you have to open your mouth so wide.
And the dentist tugs at you, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So then he messaged me from the hospital and said, they're keeping me in. And he was fine. The next message I got from him was, they've done all the x-rays, they've done everything they're going to do, and I'm really looking forward to going home tomorrow. Sorry, I'm a bit choked up by this.
No.
And then I got a message from his friend Jill, who's a wonderful musician also in Glasgow, who he'd worked with since she was about 16, long, long time. And she said, Rab's gone down with sepsis. He couldn't breathe. He's on a ventilator. It doesn't look as though he's going to make it. And then Friday afternoon, I got another note from her to say that he'd died.
My God. What a shock that must have been for you.
Just like that. And I want to say, stay as far away from hospitals as you can right now.
Yeah.
Because my mum, when she went in to have her gallbladder removed, I mean, admittedly, she's an elderly lady, but while she was in the hospital, she contracted sepsis and she very nearly died.
Mm. My God.
So, you know, sepsis is the thing we all need to worry about.
Oh, we
right
do.
Now.
I mean, there's a lovely little girl who appears on various TV shows.
Oh, I know the one you mean, yes.
Piers Morgan bigged her up enormously because Piers is a very kind man, you know. And she's a little girl and she lost the extremities of her legs and her arms to sepsis. And, you know, she just...
It's the saddest thing, seeing pictures of her. And just a little child with her whole life ahead of her. And she's only got half her arms and half her legs. It's awful.
Exactly. And you know, but that's a terrible story. So, you know, I'll tell you my tooth story. It pales into complete insignificance. But after I ate dinner last night and I was having day three of my Sunday roast, you know, see what I mean? And
you make it last 3 days.
Well, I buy a big joint of fillet, which costs about 25 quid. So it does last 3 days, yeah. But I mean, I slice it individually, if you see what I mean. But anyway, I went to bed last night and I don't know why. I have a toothache here. I'm sure it's nothing. I must have. So in the middle of the night, it was raging toothache, okay? And I thought, this isn't good. I'm going to have this tooth taken out. And my main worry was, now that I do television work, I wanted to make sure it wasn't a tooth that was going to make me look stupid if I smiled, you know. So I was trying. So I went and got a little hammer and started knocking my teeth to try and...
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I mean, what did you do that for?
Well, I wanted to find out which tooth it was because I was so worried it might be in the front of my mouth.
You can't go smashing your own teeth.
No. I wasn't trying to knock my tooth out.
What was it? One of those hammers like you break toffee with? One of those little ones?
It's a hammer more usually used with, you know, trying to correct a watch or something like that. You see what I mean? It's a little hammer. And I knocked my teeth to try and find out which one it was. Anyway. By the time it came to 6 a.m.
Are you losing your marbles?
No, I'm not. I was very worried about this tooth. So by the time it came to 6 a.m., I thought, you know, I've got to find out. So I emailed my dentist, who was a brilliant guy, right, who's looked after my teeth for the last 30 years and they're in great shape, except for the problem we had with taking...
Except for the endless problems you've had with your teeth lately.
Except for spending £2,500 on a tooth and then having it taken out, but it was the wrong tooth. But anyway, that doesn't matter. My dentist is lying on a beach in Tenerife, right? For whatever reason, I presume he's on holiday.
That is generally why people lie on a beach in Tenerife,
And he gets back to me at about sort of 10 o'clock and... asked me to send him a picture of the tooth, which I did. I took a picture of my own tooth, you know, and then wanted a detailed breakdown of the symptoms and then got back to me and said, you haven't got toothache. It sounds to me like you've got an abscess. I've sent a prescription to the surgery for you to get penicillin. Take this for 3 days. You'll be okay. And that was quite a relief, to be honest, because it was so painful. But I didn't want to lose my tooth. But then again, there you go. You know what I mean?
So did you get the prescription and is it better?
The prescription's with the dentist now. And I've got to go, and, as we speak, go and pick up the, you know, the antibiotics or whatever, you know.
Oh, God. I wish you well. Yeah. I hope it's better. But don't go to hospital, whatever you do.
No, I think you're absolutely right.
Oh, I'm so frightened by this. I'm so, so upset about Rab. He was one of the nicest guys in the world and would do anything for anybody. Mm. I interviewed him for my book on the Rolling Stones and he had great memories about seeing the band on the years and so on. And he was just so generous with his time and such a loving, giving person, a wonderful musician who should have had a higher profile down the years. But the thing about Rab, and this is a really important lesson for everybody, I think, he appreciated himself and his own talent. Mm-hmm. And he didn't really need the appreciation of others. And I think there's a big lesson there.
Well, we all like to be told that we're doing a good job, don't we?
We do, but we don't necessarily need approval from other people. He knew that he was a brilliant musician and he knew that he'd cut some great albums. His music will live on well after him. Yeah. And I think it's important sometimes to recognize that we think we're good.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. In our business, or certainly in my broadcasting business, if you don't get a pat on the back after a show to say, brilliant show, Mike, well done, you feel a bit down, you know what I mean? You think, hang on, something must have gone wrong. It's just an ego thing. But our industry works on ego. That's the problem.
Well, it does, and there's such fragility in people.
There is.
And I think also there's a lot of bullshit as well, to pardon the phrase, but, you know, people patting you on the back and telling you that it was brilliant when actually they thought it was crap.
Yes, no, I totally agree. But there we are. Right, okay, folks, that is the conclusion of the latest Life on Planet Porky with myself, the Paul Mice, and, of course, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones, rock chick writer extraordinaire. Thank you very much indeed for having been with us for the last 45 minutes, and we'll be back with you again this time next week. A bloke walked down the drive and brought us some cups of coffee. And I said, well, that's very nice. Yeah, that's very nice. He said, yeah, but it was actually one of our colleagues. I said, what are you talking about? He said, what's the name of the guy I'm talking about?
Don McKay.
Thank you.
Did you lose the plot there?
I'm sorry. I had a brain fog there. He said, it's Don McKay. I said, don't be ridiculous. What are you talking about? He said, no, honestly. Don came down with a tray with 8 cups of coffee and gave us all cups of coffee at the gates to Highgrove. I said, have you gone mad? And it turned out that Nicola McAuliffe, is it McAuliffe?
Nicola McAuliffe.
Nicola McAuliffe was a friend of the woman who's now the Queen. What's she called?
Camilla Parker Bowles.
Yeah,
as she was at the time.
Yeah. So what is she now? Queen Regent.
She's the Queen Consort.
Queen Consort, thank you.
Keep up, yeah, Mike.
Thank you. I'm slowing down here, folks, but don't worry, I'll regain my energy. And he hoped that he'd get the reputation for every time you ring Warren, he's actually having sex with a woman, no matter whether it's day or night. You know what I mean?
That's utterly pathetic.
Well, it is, but apparently that's what he used to do.
You're quite sort of in touch with nature, I think.
Well, I'll try to keep in touch with nature.
If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It's a family show.
I'm not into sort of, you know, sex in fields and all that kind of stuff. You might be hinting that.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month, no commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. You coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.